Welcome, everybody, to Are You Not Entertained? My name is Kent, and Carrie's not talking. That means that it's a horror podcast, and it's episode 140. It's November 29th. Jesus, we are almost done with the year. I'm back with Chris, and we're going to talk about vampires, by and large, this week. Chris, how are you?
Word up, people. Chris from Team Edward here, coming at you, so...
What, you not backing Jacob? What the fuck, man?
I'm hairy enough in real life as it is. I don't need to bring any more hair into the mix. So.
Maybe this is why I like Jacob so much. You know, a little hair envy going on here. Thank God nobody put in Twilight, because I think I would have really just kicked them out of the group. That would have been warranted.
Are you sure nobody put in Twilight?
Well, I know there was a fake person that did, and I saw that. And worst part is I have to admit that I've seen Twilight. I never saw any of the other ones. I only saw the first one, but ugh.
Would it make you hate me if I told you that I actually own every single one of those on Blu-ray?
Now, did you actually buy them for yourself is the question.
I did not buy them for myself, but I did see every single one of them in the movies with my wife. I'll leave it at that.
All right. I'm just going to assume that you watched it partially for her, and that just is the happier way of telling that story.
Although, if I really want to make you lose respect for me, I also stole my dad's copy of the books, and I still have them.
I've heard the books aren't terrible. I don't know.
They pretty much are.
Okay.
It was like in one of those low points of my life when I was reading a lot of romance novels.
I have never once read a romance novel. I'm okay with that. I think The Scarlet Letter is probably about as romantic as it got for me.
Oh, so romantic.
Yep. So, with that being said, as I said, this month we're just talking vampire movies. As I told Chris before we started, as I just typed in like best vampire movies, and I'm looking through all these lists, I'm like, first of all, unlike zombie movies, this has a wider variance. That there's not, aside from the Lost Boys, there's a ton of variance among lists that you find online. I don't know if you looked at any of them online.
I did not look at any lists for this month. This month I strode in straight from the hip, as it were.
Ah, fantastic. I knew what movies I was going to go for by and large, and it worked out okay. We do have a nice variety because of this. So, without further ado, first of all, we're going to talk vampire films, and then we're going to kind of linger slightly onto favorite vampires, but that should be a much shorter conversation. And then stay tuned for a conversation about The Collector, because that was our horror film of the month. Okay, so the first person that responded was Joe. He had, I'll go reverse, he had Blade at number 5. I don't hate Blade. I also don't really love Blade.
I love Blade. I love Blade 2. I like Blade 3. I can see where they were going. My problem with that is, like, Blade for me sits in the cusp of one of those things where it's a vampire movie. The first one tried a little bit to be horror, but it also embraced, it was basically the first modern superhero movie. And there was a little comedy in there, too, so... I can understand why somebody would put it on there, but because of those things, I would have a harder time fitting it into a straight-up horror list than I would if it was, like, horror genres crossed with something else, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I like a lot, too, but I wouldn't throw it in one of my top vampire lists because, again, it's one of those, like, mixed genre kind of films.
Yeah. Really, the 90s had a good chunk of vampire films, and we're probably going to bring up damn near most of the big ones. One I noticed that I didn't see on anybody's list, I'm thinking, was Bram Stoker's Dracula. Was you a fan of that? Because I always get bored during it.
All right, so there's two reasons to be a fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula. The one is it's one of the most accurate to the book, if you're a big book fan. And two, if you're like a young teenager like I was when it came out, there is enough boobs and titillation to really keep you occupied, as it were. Like the Keanu scene. Keanu... I'm thinking
that
of like
scene.
The scene with Sadie Frost where she and Gary Oldman are going at it Wolfman form. And the, you know, I mean, it was just, but it was a pretty decent version too. It was a little over top in some areas. Like Anthony Hopkins definitely did a little bit of an excitable Van Helsing. But yeah, it wasn't a bad movie. But again, Dracula's been done to death so many times that it's hard to throw him, you know, any one of his movies in there. I would definitely give him probably number one in my top vampires list just because he created the genre, as it were, you know, between Lugosi's movie and himself as a book character. So,
sure. Moving on Joe's list, number four, he had The Hunger. I'm not 100% sure I've seen The Hunger. I feel like I have, but it's one of those things I don't remember a damn thing about. Have you seen it?
I've seen it, and I've read the book, and it's one of, it's a fucking straight-up 80s, 80s title. Like, you watch it now, and you see it, and you will straight-up, it was Tony Scott. It was one of the ones where he built the you know, his style for himself between that and Blade Runner. And the other shit he did in the mid-80s.
Tony Scott was... He was a visionary. No. Yeah,
I mean, between him and his brother, you know. But you can see it in the way it was filmed. It was Bowie was one of the main actors in it. The main vampire was played by Catherine Denny. I mean, I can't never pronounce her name right.
Yeah,
Catherine whatever French. I believe she was a French model before she became an actress and. You know, it was a very pretty film. She's an immortal vampire, and Bowie is like her companion, and he begins to age. And so since medicine is a little more advanced now than it was, you know, like 2,000 years before when she, you know, first realized she was a vampire, they try to see what they can do to keep him alive, you know, without realizing that he's a vampire. So the doctors are trying to treat it, this guy who's like suddenly aging, you know, like that, and she realizes that, you know, they're not going to be able to save him, but she decides Susan Sarandon, who's one of the doctors, is going to be her next target. It was pretty good. I mean, I think if, it's one of my number one honorable mentions, so. Oh, I guess Dracula was too.
Like I said, I think I've seen it, but I don't remember. I think it's something I would enjoy revisiting at the very least. Speaking of movies that I know I've seen, but I can't tell you a goddamn thing about it anymore, is Fright Night.
Oh my god, Ken. Yeah, I can see how... Okay, yeah, that was the original. The new one was really good, too, I believe. So that was the one where you had... shit, what the hell was the kid's name? Charlie something. Well, Charlie was his name, but the kid went on to do Herman's Head.
You know, oh, no on. Shit. Okay.
But, you know, he sees a guy moving in next door. He's kind of shady. You know, he looks like a 70s friggin' disco gigolo. That's Chris Sarandon. And all of a sudden, people start disappearing. And he's, like, a fan of, like, one of the old, like, Vincent Price, you know, horror TV shows where the guy's name is, Andrew Vincent, Adam Vincent, something Vincent. And it's, Roddy McDowell, or Peter Vincent, that's the guy's name, on TV, and he ends up convincing him that vampires are real and to come help him be like his Van Helsing to get rid of this guy who's, you know, he sees the guy bring a woman into his house and bite into her neck, and then the guy closes the curtains, and, you know, then the woman shows up missing later on, so the vampire, Jerry Dandridge, ends up, you know, stalking him, you know, going after his mom and shit. So it was pretty good. It was, again, it was another 80s movie. maybe a little earlier 80s vintage than like the Lost Boys was, but...
And it also has Amanda Beers, best known as Marcy Darcy from Married with Children.
Oh yeah, she turns into a really creepy looking female. The female vampires in those movies like have like a zillion fucking teeth.
Fantastic. It's one of those things, providing I do something next October. I'll probably just get to it before then. This isn't going to be the last time we talk about Chris Sarandon. He appears later on this list too. So that's nice. Moving on. Let's talk about his number one before we hit the number two, because the number two is on pretty much everybody's list. Number one, he had Blackula, which I just saw for the first time this past October. Have you seen it?
No, this will be one that you'll be talking about without me, because I have never seen Blackula.
It is a blaxploitation film. It's exactly what you think it's going to be. There's, you know, the language is something that people would not approve of nowadays. But there's like this cool vibe to it, which I feel like there's always kind of like somewhat of a cool vibe sometimes in these like blaxploitation films. The dude who played Blackula was awesome. He had such a great voice. I don't know why, but some voices just like will stay with you, and his voice was solid. It's one of those things that, I mean, yeah, it was made in 72, so that makes it, I don't know, 45 years old, and yet I didn't feel like it was horribly dated to the point where I found it like boring. I really enjoyed it. The main guy's name is William Marshall. There was a couple other characters that kind of stood out here and there, but the best scene is a scene with a taxi driver. So if you watch it, that'll probably be your favorite scene, hopefully. And it's also a romance, a little bit. And I didn't hate the fact that it was a romance, because normally I don't like romance in my films. So, and actually I watched Blackula because Joe had told me to watch it. So, there we go. His number two is Lost Boys, and like I said, it's on pretty much everybody's list. To the point where I can easily say it's the overwhelming number one pick, basically, because I think it's like the only movie that's on everybody's list. I don't know, it's iconic for any number of reasons. Did you watch it when it was like in the 80s, or did like
I want to say not right when it came out, but maybe within a year or two, because shit, do we have the year that it came out in?
I can pull that up while you talk.
I mean, I would have been
87.
Okay, I would have been 7 when it came out. So I want to say that I'm probably about like 89-ish. For some reason, there was like a year between like 8 and 9 when all of a sudden my parents decided that I was able to watch scary movies. Or maybe it was just like less that I was able to watch scary movies and more that like my dad was showing us scary movies and my mom was like, fuck it, you guys are going to be scared anyways. Go ahead and watch what you want to watch. But no, I mean, I remember watching it when, you know, Corey Haim and Corey Feldman were still big, you know. And, you know, back when, like, what was her name? Jamie Gertz and What's-His-Face were still, you know, I don't remember if they did that or Solar Babies first, but, you know.
Jason Patrick was, yeah, because that fucking hair that he had and...
But I want to say this was probably what kicked Keith off. I'm pretty sure it was this and then the Young Guns movies. I don't know. Maybe it was the opposite way around. But yeah, I mean, Kiefer was a fucking badass. I remember, like, really thinking David looked awesome, and I freehand drew, like, a pencil sketch of his face turned into vampire, and then I redrew it with pen back in the day. So yeah, I was a big Lost Boys fan. And I appreciated the humor, too. I mean, the grandfather fucking kills me still.
Kiefer was... I mean, this was pinnacle. Like, yes, he had... He'd done Stand By Me, and... I mean, it was a good showing, but, I mean, he wasn't the main character or anything. But in some ways, I mean, Stand By Me was the precursor of just him being a straight-up dick, and then he did Lost Boys, and he killed it, and then, you know, as you said, Young Guns. Didn't he also do Flatliners? He did, yeah.
I want to say that was maybe...
90.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say 2 or 3 years later, so...
Yeah. And yeah, Edward Herrmann as Max, I mean, that was...
That was a shock back in the day. I mean, people...
It was a good twist, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If they rebooted that one, I don't see how they would fucking be able to keep that twist in the movie without it just seeing kind of derivative.
Yeah. I mean, Diane Weist, Jesus. I mean, even had Alex Winter in it. Like, it's just loaded, and... It's not only good, but it has I mean we talked about it 2 months ago. It has the soundtrack is excellent. It's one of the best soundtracks. And not only that, it has like iconic scenes. Like I still remember the first time I saw the whole maggot scene or saxophone guy. Like those things are really well. I don't know. They always
like saxophone guy is real. I mean that's the first thing.
Yeah, like. And he is still in good shape, too. I saw him on YouTube at a Comic-Con. He is still able to do it. So, good for him.
We have, quick aside, keep your train of thought. We have computers at work that allow us to access the internet. And, you know, YouTube is one of the unbiased things that we can pull up. I remember one night at work, somebody pulled up the 17-hour saxophone guy meme on YouTube and just let it run the entire night. So every time somebody went in to that post on shift, you saw saxophone guy just doing his thing. It was pretty awesome.
That is fantastic. Actually, I just opened up a can of tomato juice, and I tell you this because I've been playing South Park Fractured Butthole, and the DLC...
No, I didn't realize what their name meant until you just actually said it out loud for me.
Ah, well, there you go. The DLC has a, like, From Dusk Till Dawn at Casa Bonita, and they actually have a character who is basically trying to be, like, Kiefer, and one of the fights is against Michael Jackson, but they keep calling him Corey Haim. So I was like, holy shit, all this is happening today, like, the day of the podcast. I had no idea, so it was, like, a pleasant surprise, you know? Really timely. Yeah, so I highly recommend the game, too. I don't think it's still on sale, but it was like only $20 for everything, the DLC and everything. Fun game. If you like South Park. If you don't like South Park, not worth it. So, any other thoughts on... I mean, realistically, I could probably talk about Lost Boys for a good 10-15 minutes, but I know that we're going to try to keep this thing moving, so do you have any other thoughts on Lost Boys?
Not only do I not, I think we've talked about it to death in multiple podcasts, so.
Yeah.
Great job, Lost Boys. You're my number two, but you're number one in my heart.
Yeah. All right, so there's Chris, who had Eclipse, New Moon, Breaking Dawn Part 2, Breaking Dawn Part 1, and Twilight at number one. And we've kind of already discussed the Twilight series. And I really think
that Breaking Dawn Part 1 topped Breaking Dawn Part 2 because of the pre-birth jitters that people who hadn't read the books wouldn't know about. You know, was she going to survive the birth of Renesmee or not? You know, anyways, let's just fucking skip this list.
how the fuck does that whole thing end? Like, I'm never going to watch it, but if you could break down everything in less than a minute, I would just like to know how, like...
Did you at least see parts of part two where there's like the ancient vampire society that's the one who sets the rules that says don't come out in the sunlight and let everybody know that you're a vampire?
Nope.
All right, so there's an ancient vampire society off in like Italy that says don't come out in the sunlight, let everybody know that you're a vampire because they glow. You remember?
Yeah, I remember the glow. Yeah.
So they find out that Bella knows about vampires and they say, okay, Edward, you know, you're saying you're going to turn her, you've got a fucking drop dead date of blah blah blah. So he turns her, they get married, she gets pregnant on their honeymoon, and the birth goes like super fast. She has the baby. Jacob imprints on the baby when the baby's a baby, so that's kind of fucking creepy. Then they turn her after she after she's been had the baby. So like she was they were worried that she was going to be killed by the baby coming and busting out of her, or you know, like just breaking her bones because the vampires are so strong, what have you. So she becomes a vampire. The daughter fucking grows up fast. Bella's got powers. The old vampire people collect vampires with powers. Bella's powers that she can shield other people, so they form like their own vampire commune with the werewolves. And the other vampires show up, and it looks like there's going to be a big fucking fight, and then they just stand down, and that's it. Happy ever after.
All right, good. You just yep. saved me so much time. So, thank you. With that being said, let's move on to your list. Let's hit your honorable mentions, because there was a couple of them. Okay, there was at least one of them that I really want to talk about. We already talked about The Hunger. Dracula, I'm assuming, were you just referring to the original or just like every fucking Dracula made?
I was really referring to Bram Stoker's. The original is kind of fucking a little too cheesy for me. I mean, it's not a bad Universal horror movie for, what, 1939, but still, it's, you know, to me, it's not a scary movie.
Oh, no, it's not scary. I mean, none of them really were. But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, they have a weird place in my heart, basically. I always saw Nosferatu, was it this year? I think this year was the first time I ever saw Nosferatu. I don't know why it took me so long. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
On the other hand, I would say that if you're looking, compare Nosferatu compared to Dracula is a fucking scary movie.
Yeah. I would 100% agree with that. Just because of the look of the vampire, honestly. But the whole tone and vibe and it being silent, I don't know, it adds to it.
Oh yeah. I mean, they did a 1970s remake of it too. I forgot what the hell that one was called, but
I actually read up on that yesterday, and I cannot think of what it was called, but yeah, I did read up on it. I haven't seen that one yet.
And that one, again, was another one where, like, if you compare Christopher Lee's Hammer Dracula to that dude's fucking, whatever the fuck the vampire's name was, it wasn't, I don't think it was the same. Yeah, again, fucking scary dude.
Sure. I hate to admit, I don't think I've ever seen the Christopher Lee one. I feel a lot of shame saying that, but I don't think I ever have.
I want to say, too, I think that Peter Cushing was Van Helsing to Christopher Lee's Dracula in most of those. So, yeah, they were pretty good. I mean, it was Hammer movies, so, you know, they weren't blaxploitation, they were, you know, European shocksploitation. Let's show a lot of blood comparatively to what America's showing in their horror movies, which almost incidentally I think is what gave rise to you know, less like monster movies in America and more like Sleepaway Camp, Last House on the Left, that kind of shit coming to prominence as the scary movies in the 70s.
Sleepaway Camp, that just made me happy hearing those words. Big fan. Now, did those movies, the Hammer movies, did those happen during, before, or after, like, what was it, Amicus? Like, the anthology movies from that period?
I want to say, I think they were, some of them were done by Hammer, but, like, during and after.
Okay.
I want to believe they were, like, a late 50s to, like, an early 70s kind of thing. I mean, okay. Hammer movies were just horror movies produced by Hammer Studios in England, so.
Alright. Let's see, you had Fright Night, which we already talked about. Man, you had a movie on my list here, From Dusk Till Dawn. I don't know what you got to say about From Dusk Till Dawn, because I don't know.
I don't have too much, because, I mean, we did talk about it last month in the, or last podcast with the music. Two podcasts ago, I guess, with the music, where, it's a fucking, one of my favorite movies overall, just, I could pop it in and watch it anytime, you know, the Cheech fucking, monologue, you know, Salma Hayek stripping, the whole beginning part with the, you know, kidnapping, you know, Harvey Keitel's character as a fallen but repentant preacher, you know, everything except for the sun really does it for me in that movie.
If that sun had been cast or written better, yeah. I love Tarantino's character. Did you mean what you said back there? Like, I just love how fucking delusional he is. I love that Tom Savini had a gun for, you know, symbolic dick going on there, sex machine. God damn it. There's just so much to love in that film. And you're right. It's one of those things you can... I don't know. I can definitely pop it in right now and be like, all right, cool. I'm happy as hell just to be watching it. So, I don't know. It was like the right mixture of action, horror, good acting, good music. Like, there was nothing really
about it. I love the fucking scene where Fred Williamson stabs the fucking heart with the pencil to kill the vampire. I mean, they just did a really good job between, like you said, mixing genres, the action, the horror, the humor.
Was that a Robert Rodriguez film?
Yes, Tarantino wrote it, Rodriguez directed it.
Alright, gotcha. Yeah, that's... spoiler alert, that's my number three film. Alright, you have two other ones. You have Let Me In. And before we talk about Let Me In, was that the same as Let the Right One In, or are they two separate films?
They're two separate films, but one is the original Swedish, and the other is the American remake. Both of which are really good. I think the original is a little bit better in this case, but I mean, it's arguable. You could have people argue either way, and I could see both of them being... Because they're almost... They're not quite shot-for-shot recreations, but there's a little added, like, subtext in the American remake due to the time and location it's set. I want to say, like, because of, like, some of the economic policies that Reagan did, you can see, like, the towns dying off, you know, comparatively to me not knowing anything about, you know... what Scandinavian, you know, modern day life is like. So
I'm pretty sure I've seen both of them, and I know I own at least one of them. I know for a fact I've seen the original, and I'm pretty sure I own the remake. And yeah, I mean, I had both of them actually on my honorable mentions list. I remember thinking that they're really good. I had a really good time with them. It was kind of a romance thing, right?
A little bit of a romance, but I mean, it was more to me like a really excellent example of what it would be like to have a young vampire, you know, a vampire trapped in a child's body compared to, like, say, Claudia, an Interview with a Vampire, where, you know, all of a sudden this little girl's a vampire, but, you know, not even 20 years later, she's acting like an adult. You know, I get that, you know, that might be the end state for where one of them would end up, but I really think that, like, Anne Rice should have stretched that time period out a little bit longer than she did, so.
Fair enough. I'm looking at the American version, and, I mean, it has Chloe Grace Moretz, who a lot of people like, but it has Richard Jenkins, who is the father in Step Brothers, and it has Elias Koteas, one of those great glue guys in a film. Like, he doesn't have to be the star, but he shines in almost every scene that he's in, I feel. So they did a really good job on the casting, it feels.
Yeah, Richard Jenkins plays like her Renfield.
Yeah.
And Elias Koteas is the cop who is investigating the murder, and there is a scene where she fucking works him over that is so fucking brutal, it's not even funny.
Yeah, that's something. It was actually on my list to do this October, and I just I didn't get around to it because I had too many things on my list, as is tradition. So, there's always next year. The last thing that was on your honorable mention, and this is something I was reading about because it really had my attention, but I've never seen it, is Byzantium. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep. It was, so tell me. I watched it off of, again, it was like a, I don't remember if it was like a top horror list or a top vampire list, but it was a couple of years ago, and it was Gemma Arterton and Saoirse Ronan playing mother and daughter vampires, stuck in their ages, you know, but at this point they're, you know, a couple hundred years old, who basically, it's they're not like bloodthirsty or too crazy, but, you know, they're being pursued over the years by vampire hunters, so they just have to continue moving, and it's like how the young girl like tries to go to college. Like, do you remember X-Men First Class?
Of course.
The kid who played Banshee, Irish
kid,
he's in it, and he's like her, I don't want to say love interest, because I don't really know if she's in love with him, but it was pretty interesting. The mythology was interesting. It's definitely a slow burn, and I would say it's less of a horror movie than a more of like a I can't even think of the term off the top of my head right now. Like a what if these people were vampires kind of, you know, like character study. There we go.
Ah, gotcha. All right. Yeah, it's something that, like I said, I saw it on quite a few lists, and I was like, geez, it sounded like something I would enjoy. So, moving on to your actual list, number 5, Salem's Lot. Have at it.
Stephen King just did a really fucking strong job of making a vampire novel and making them scary, rather than going through, like, the Anne Rice seductive vampires, which really I think started from like Frank Langella's Dracula, maybe back in 1979-ish, and avoiding like the pop tweeny vampires that they would grow into in the 90s, you know, was it Joe who put up the thing on your Facebook post today who was talking about like Barlow on like the top vampires?
Yes, that was him.
Yeah, like he said, did one response to that where I was like, I wish they could have mixed the original movie, which is pretty accurate, but pretty dated now, with the Rob Lowe remake, and I think you would have a fucking the same kind of success that they had with It, you know, if they could get the two tones between them.
That makes sense, yeah. I'd like to see that, actually.
Yeah, maybe we will down the road. I mean, the Pet Sematary remake that's coming out looks like it's going to be pretty good, too. So,
I am cautiously optimistic, and also cautiously optimistic about the Candyman movie. I hope they cast it properly. That's the story's easy enough to tell.
If they make it to make a good Candyman movie first, and then whatever kind of social commentary they're going to do second, it should be a good movie.
Jordan Peele's involved. There's going to be a lot of social commentary, but in all fairness, I was thinking about this as I was like, I debated about it because Dom shared me, I don't know, something about it, and I was like, really, Candyman was a lot of social commentary in and of itself, just at a time when it was a different. You know, it was just different, but it was a lot of social commentary in that. I just hope that they don't need to go any more into social commentary than what they did in the original.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, if all of a sudden Candyman becomes the hero of the story because he's a black guy, that's social commentary. But if they keep it that he's a tragic figure, but he's still a villain because of what he chooses to do, that's a good movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. And honestly, Candyman is possibly going to be my next tattoo whenever I eventually get another tattoo.
I still don't say Candyman in front of a fucking mirror.
I still say when people finish that movie, the first time they go to the bathroom, they walk past the mirror, in the back of their mind, it's still there, even though they know it's fake. It's still in the back of their mind. So,
to say that, like, very rarely will I be in a bathroom with the lights out and look into a mirror. I usually, if I'm going to be looking in the mirror, the light's going on. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Did you have anything more you wanted to add on to Sam's Lot?
No, that's okay. We're good.
Okay. Now, I was trying to find fucking Stakeland, but I can't find Stakeland streaming anywhere at the moment because I was going to watch it so I could participate more in this conversation. I've seen it before. I liked it, but I don't remember it strong enough, so I'm going to really rely on you yet again here.
I watched it on that app I linked you back in the day. Gotcha. So I assume it's still going to be there. It's post-apocalyptic, but the apocalypse, instead of being zombies or disease, is that vampires happen. And they're more the feral vampires than they are thinking. Although, towards the first movie, one of the problems that develops is that some of them begin to think for themselves. But, you know, it's to the point where, like, a cult develops because they believe that it's humanity's fault for being so fucking evil towards the Earth, so they start dropping vampires onto healthy people and out of helicopters in an effort to end the world sooner. I mean, it's just pretty nihilistic, but I mean, it reminded me of like what Zombieland would be if Zombieland was a fucking serious movie rather than being a comedy first and foremost.
That makes sense. I always liked the fact that the main older guy was named Mister. I love the fact that Kelly McGillis was in this. She's done a few horror movies right around that time period. And Danielle Harris is in it, and I can't say enough positive things about that girl. I just really like her.
Yeah, dude, Mister was fucking awesome. I mean, he's not a very good-looking dude. So the fact that, you know, they actually portrayed him as such. One of the things I liked was, like, for vampire hunters, the teeth were what they used to pay for their way in, you know, the settlements that they went to.
Yeah, I remember sitting there thinking that it felt like a unique take on both vampires and post-apocalyptic whatever. So, did you see the sequel yet?
I did, and it was good. It wasn't as good. It's almost like a direct continuation, like set a couple years after the first one. So like it takes place, the main character is still the kid from the first one. He's been living up in that like a way station with the girl he meets at the end that Mister leaves him with. And they get attacked by some of the more intelligent vampires. And he goes looking for Mister to get revenge, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. I still haven't seen it. Once again, my issue was I wanted to watch Stakeland 1 again before delving into Stakeland 2 just to help jog my memory a little bit better.
1 was better than 2, but I think, like, together they would have made, like, a good miniseries, you know, like a good 5 or 6 hours, you know.
Fair
enough. I would have said sci-fi, but that was back when, you know, sci-fi was good rather than, like, Sharknado kind of bullshit.
Sharknado. So, your number 3 is probably the movie that I noticed the most that when I'm reading descriptions, I was like, shit, how have I never seen this? The film I'm talking about is Near Dark. I know I've never seen it, and it sounds amazing. So, tell me more.
All right. So, I want to say this was made directly the year after Aliens finished. It was made by James Cameron's then-wife, now ex-wife, Oscar Award winner, Kathryn Bigelow. It had Bill Paxton, Jeanette Goldstein, and Lance Henriksen working together right after working together on Aliens. I can't even begin to describe. It's Southern crazy-ass vampires who don't give a fuck. It's very nihilistic for most of its length until the end when all of a sudden there's hope injected and, hey, we figured out we can cure you of your vampirism, blah, blah, blah. But it's brutal. It's It's almost like the opposite of Lost Boys. And, like, Lost Boys had some brutal scenes, but it was very glossy. It was very, like, California-ish, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
This is, like, Mid-South Deliverance kind of, like...
Not
glossy, very rough-cut, grainy. And it, not the way it's filmed, but just this is the way it, like, comes off to me in my head from remembering it. It's just a really good underrated vampire movie. Not enough people saw it because I want to say I think it did come out in competition to Lost Boys.
It did come out in 87. I didn't know that there was another film starring Lance Henriksen and Bill Paxton, or else I probably would have been on that shit years ago, as I'm a big fan of both gentlemen. So I think that's what stood out to me immediately. I was like, how the fuck have I never seen a movie with these two guys? Another movie with these two guys. So that's actually on my to-do list, hopefully maybe this week, quite frankly. Like, I really want to see it. So your number two was Lost Boys. Now, I'm looking at your number one, and there's just no way of getting around this. I hate your number one film. I don't get it, so I'm going to leave you the floor here. You had 30 Days of Night.
All right, you're dead to me inside now, Kent. That's it.
That's okay, because it has that awful... Who the fuck's the star of it? I can't even think of his name now.
Josh Hartnett?
Yeah, I can't stand him, so I was already lost, but go on.
Well, okay. What do you remember of vampire movies before that came out?
What do I remember? What do you mean?
Like, say the 10 years before that came out, or any vampire movie, say between, like, From Dusk Till Dawn and 30 Days of Night when it came out. What do you remember?
I don't know if Bordello of Blood is in there, and Blade, I don't know if Underworld, there wasn't many.
And if they were more along the lines of, like, say, like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or like a Blade.
Vampire in Brooklyn?
Vampire in Brooklyn. Although he was actually a decent vampire. You know, the whole front.
Was that the Eddie Murphy one or Leslie Nielsen one?
That was the Eddie Murphy one. Dracula Dead and Loving It was the Leslie Nielsen one.
Gotcha.
But, you know, they had become more action stars or superheroes than monsters.
I agree with that.
Then all of a sudden, you get something like 30 Days of Night, which in itself is just an interesting concept. Here's the one spot on Earth where they can go and feed uninterrupted for a month straight without having to worry about the sun coming out.
Idealistically, I love the idea of it. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say I would love to see a remake of it. I love Danny Houston. I like Ben Foster, and I love Mark Boone Jr.
I forgot that Manu Bennett was in it.
I don't know who that is, do I?
He was Crixus in Spartacus. He was... like the one good thing about the Shannara TV series on MTV, he was Billy in 30 Days of Night. I probably didn't remember him because he had such a fucking thick beard. And even I like Josh Hartnett a lot. I think he did really good in what the hell was that one on Showtime? Penny Dreadful.
Oh, Penny Dreadful, right?
Yeah, he's one of those people to me like Shane West is, where there are certain roles that suit them. And they actually do really well in it. And there's certain roles that don't suit them that they got a lot of right at the start because they were the teen heartthrob, you know, coming off of The Faculty and whatever the fuck Shane West started in.
I love The Faculty. Oddly enough, Penny Dreadful, I couldn't get into it for the exact same reason. Like, I don't know what my problem is with Josh, but I can't. I even like Melissa George, who was probably the co-star, at least number two.
Yeah.
But
from a vampire movie standpoint, ignoring Josh Hartnett, they're brutal.
Story-wise, yeah, it's
none of them speak English. You know, they speak like ancient Etruscan or something. They remind me of sharks. You know, they just straight up predators. Nothing that people can do can kill them. You know, it's basically just about as nihilistic a movie as you can get until the very ending, when all of a sudden becoming one lets you fight them off. But whatever the fuck. You know, I think it was a return to form that vampires needed in scariness and brutality. And I think we got that somewhat since then.
Yeah, I can understand why. I understand everything you're saying. It's just one of those things I don't know if I can get past. And that's my own personal hang-up. I think story-wise, I think it's all there. I do. Probably, I don't know, is there a book? You're the book guy here.
It's a comic book, and there's a whole series. And yes, I actually read the comic book before they made the movie. And it's pretty close. There's places where it's shot for shot exactly, you know, like the comic frames, and then there's places where it differentiates a hell of a lot. Like, there was no big scene in the comic book where they're running around with a snowplow trying to, you know, mulch vampires.
Fair enough. All right. Moving on, we'll get to my list next. Most of the stuff that I have on my list, oh shit, you know what, I didn't get to Cece's list. Let's do her list. She didn't have any specific order, but there's a few on here that we haven't talked about. Interview with the Vampire, we did talk about a little bit. I had a conversation with my friend Amanda, who is Mookie. She commented on the thread earlier yesterday. Has Interview aged poorly, do you think?
No, I don't think it's aged poorly, but I don't think it's... Again, like, to me, it's not very scary. It's hard to make vampires scary when they're romantic. If you know.
Yeah. I loved the movie, and it hasn't aged well for me, and I don't know if it's my taste change. I don't know, but at the time, I loved it. I still like Brad Pitt. I love Antonio Banderas. I like Christian Slater. This actually was probably one of the very few movies I like Tom Cruise in, but still, all in all, I look back on it, I'm like, yeah, I'm not as huge a fan as I used to be. Back, you know, 20 years, well, say 15 years ago, I would have probably had it in my top 5, if not top 3, really. And now it's really sunk. She had Lost Boys, she had Queen of the Damned, and that's another vampire movie I will never understand the appeal of. I know you liked the soundtrack. Did you like the film as well?
I had problems with the film. But a lot of the problems that I have stem from the fact that it's the third book in the series, and they really need to do book 2 in order for book 3 to make any fucking sense. And they didn't, so it really doesn't make sense. So there's lots of shit that's fucking left out all over the place. Some of the best characters from the book never got included, which, again, leaves them just fucking all over the place. I think Aaliyah was fucking amazing. Both talented and, like, crazy fucking hot. And it's sad that she fucking died. But I wasn't a big fan of Stuart Townsend as Lestat either, so...
I thought Stuart... Yeah, I didn't like him. I didn't like his performance. I agree. I thought Leah did very good. I thought the story was kind of a mess. I don't know. I didn't like it nearly as much. Yeah.
Again, it's one of the greatest soundtracks, but the pre-production was trapped in fucking hell from, like, basically the time that, I forgot who did, Neil Jordan did Interview to the time that actually came out. You know, it was fucking, like, first they were going to make the Vampire Lestat, then they couldn't get people to redo the movies, and somebody else got the ride. It was just fucking, so, I mean, I would say that would probably be why the story kind of fucking just falls apart.
Fair enough. She had From Dusk Till Dawn, and then she put on Bordello of Blood. And at first I was like, that's a silly choice. And I was like, I really enjoy, like, it's not a good movie. I know Bordello of Blood is not a good movie. It was a terrible follow-up to Demon Knight, which was actually a really great
movie. Yeah, Demon Knight was really good. Bordello of Blood, I watched right afterwards. It was shit. I'm sorry. Could be a guilty pleasure, but it was a shitty movie.
Yeah, guilty pleasure. That's all it is. I mean, it had Dennis Miller, who's not a top, you know, a leading man. Who was it? Angie Everhart, Chris Sarandon. Yes,
Angie Everhart.
Corey fucking Feldman was in it. Like, it was not good at all. But I also must say, I've probably seen it close to 7-8 times in my life. It was a movie that I owned, and back when I didn't own many movies, I watched what I had. So, yeah. Not a good movie, but yeah, guilty pleasure. So, that is CeCe's list. Now to my list. Honorable mentions. We've talked about all but one. I had Nosferatu, Dracula, Blackula, Bordello of Blood, Let the Right One In, and Let Me In. Now, have you ever seen Daybreakers?
I remember being really excited when I saw the first trailer for Daybreakers, and then I saw the movie. I was like, this is fucking completely different. It's boring as shit. I own it, but I would never have bought it if I had actually seen it before I bought it. I don't hate it. You know, I love Willem Dafoe. I love Ethan Hawke. But overall, Sam Neill was actually really good in it too, and I'm not a big Sam Neill fan. Overall, it was just, to me, it was disappointing for what the premise could have allowed them to do with the movie.
Alright, so I base this off of the fact that I don't remember. I remember the actors in it. I remember having seen it. I remember renting it from Redbox. I remember liking it, but thinking at the end, I was like, this had so much more potential. And that's all I remember. But I still threw it on my list because I remember walking away thinking, this could have been way worse. I didn't walk away completely, like, disappointed, but something, I'm pretty sure I may own it somewhere, but I don't know where. So I just put it on my honorable mention because I didn't see anybody else put it there. Then I did have Interview with the Vampire. I was really torn on a lot of things. I was going to put Stakeland, but once again, I couldn't remember enough to talk about it. The only movie that I have two movies that we haven't talked about. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I have heard so much good things about this movie. I've just never found a place to actually watch it.
It is on Shudder, and I was going to watch it before the podcast, but I did not leave myself enough time. And it's in a foreign language, so you actually have to pay attention versus having it play like on your computer while you're doing something else.
Exactly. But yes, I've heard nothing but good things about this movie.
I would say it's worth it to get Shudder or, you know, download it, however, whatever way. It's black and white. It's, you know, it's got a little artsy vibe to it, but it's beautiful. It's shot really well. I can only hope that she was an Iranian, who directed it. I just hope that she's gone on to do great things, because I was so impressed by this movie. And I did read through my blog that I wrote about it a few years ago. I read that today, and I was like, oh yeah, that's like, you know, everything was kind of flooding back to me. I was like, even though it has a little bit of romance, it wasn't anything that killed it at all for me. It was such a unique movie, and I highly recommend it to anybody who has not seen it. I can't say everybody's going to love it, but I feel that most people at the very least will walk away not feeling disappointed that they spent 100 minutes on it. So that's what I have. I had From Dusk Till Dawn, and then the other movie that I didn't see anybody else having, and I'm confused. John Carpenter's Vampires.
All right. Loved it. What I liked about John Carpenter's Vampires were the vampire hunters. What I didn't like was the plot, the vampires, the Baldwin. Yeah, they got the shittiest Baldwin to, well, maybe better than Adam, but shittier than the rest of the Baldwins to be in that one. Sorry, Billy. But like James Woods, the preacher, you got a little teak, a little mahogany.
Padre, yeah, got a little mahogany. Padre. Yeah. Mark Boone Jr., man, he's in it too.
I like, I'm not a big Valak fan, but I do like Thomas Ian Griffith and the fact that not only is the guy a martial artist and an actor, he also writes. Like he was one of the lead writers on the Grimm TV show.
I did not know that.
I didn't realize it was the same guy either until I went and looked one day and I'm like, oh, this guy was in Cull. I'm like, holy shit, that's the fucking Thomas Ian Griffith who was in Vampires and fucking what have you. So, yeah, it probably would have made my honorable mention, just like Vampire in Brooklyn probably should have. Not because Vampire in Brooklyn was so good, but it was a unique take on a vampire. And then there was a bunch of ones that I thought of, but I just hadn't seen, so I couldn't really render an opinion. But I'm interested in seeing in the future.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's one of those things, because the 90s had a bunch of somewhat high-profile vampire movies. And I don't know, when I think of vampire movies, I kind of almost compare them, like, per generation, like, per decade. And I don't know, I feel like it was, like, I don't know, maybe number 5 or 6 amongst, you know, vampire movies in the eyes of fans. And that, I don't know, it was one of those things that I always loved. I personally liked Valak a ton. I don't know. There was just a lot for me to love. I love James Woods. I don't know. I almost put it at number one. That I was like, no, I can't put it at number one because I can still, like, I can't recite word for word Lost Boys, but I can pretty much narrow it down scene by scene almost. So Lost Boys had to be my number one. Just had to be. With that being said, Amanda did top 5 vampires because I fucked up on Facebook, and when I asked her about movies, she's like, just kind of correspond top vampires to top vampire movies because they're basically two in the same. So we'll keep that in mind.
I love the fact that she fucking put why she picked everything too. It's like one of the only times we've ever had anybody other than you and mine motivations for their choices.
Yeah, I'm trying to get her actually to participate in a podcast. I don't know if she will or not, but she's got... she was my horror movie buddy for I don't know how many years. So she's somebody that can talk horror, and I was really happy that she asked me if I wanted her to go into details. Like, that would be wonderful. So I'll read what she wrote as we go, and a lot of these characters we've already talked about, but I feel it's fair just to read it since she spent the time writing it. So at number 5 she had Jerry Dandridge, Chris Sarandon from Fright Night. Jerry is possibly the sneakiest of screen vampires, able to woo his way into the heart of Charlie Brewster's mother while also perpetrating a pretty gory killing spree. Jerry is able to play the part of a nice guy during the day while spending his nights chomping on jugulars. He's so good at portraying his harmless alter ego that only Charlie is able to see through his act. Yeah, I have no argument with that, having not remembered much of the film at all. So,
with you reading that, can you understand why they cast Colin Farrell to play him in the remake?
I don't like Colin Farrell.
Oh, poor Kent. It's okay.
Yeah, good times. You know what? There is like a couple of films I like Colin Farrell in, but I'll tell you who else I don't
like.
Yeah,
fair enough. I don't like him in everything either, but I can understand.
Okay.
Seeing those qualities, why they chose to cast him, and they did a good job with him. He made a Jerry Dandridge that embodied that same thing, but was also different than Christopher Sarandon's disco portrayal.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. Colin Farrell was a good choice. I would definitely agree with that. Moving on, number 4, she had David Kiefer Sutherland from Lost Boys. She wrote, "As far as vampires, David is about as punk rock as it gets, a true badass with no morals, no limits, and no sympathy. He tears his way through the film without mercy. Unlike similarly badass vampires in other films, David has actual substance and personality. He can be a trickster, as well as a ruthless killer. Maggots, anyone? He also proves more than once that he is not the kind of guy you want to cross if you want to live." Really well summed up.
I agree.
I like it. Number three, Valak. We were just talking about him. She writes, "Unlike many screen vampires who spend a lot of time disguising themselves in alternate lives, Carpenter's Valak isn't fucking around. Valak is a monster, pure and simple, with no sugar-coated window dressing. He even looks the part of vicious bloodsucker permanently without the typical transformations portrayed in many other films. These vampires are not sex symbols or friendly neighbors. They are flat-out beastly, blood-sucking monsters with no attachments, romantic or otherwise." And that kind of actually... She said it better than my explanation 5 minutes ago about why I liked vampires. So, now this, the next one, number two, she had Severin? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Okay, from Near Dark, this is something more that you'll appreciate than me. While it's hard to choose a Lance Henriksen horror film and not name his villain the best character, this may be the only instance in which it is forgivable. While most of the vampires in this film are a little on the human side, Severin's human side is a total psychopath. He is not motivated by the loneliness or companionship his colleagues in the film seem to value and seek. He just wants to fuck shit up. He reveals in his love of violence and chaos, being run over by a tractor doesn't even slow him down a bit. I'm guessing that makes sense more to you, obviously, than to me. Right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, she's pretty spot on. He's fucking psychopath.
And her last one was Dwight Renfield, played by Michael H. Moss, in Stephen King's The Night Flyer. And I've only ever seen this movie once, and I only watch it because Miguel Ferreira, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, was in it, and I like Miguel.
Yeah, Miguel Ferrar.
Okay, yeah, so I'm really bad at names. I'm cool with that. Have you seen The Night Flyer?
I read this short story, but I've never seen the movie, so I can't comment. From what I understand, he is pretty scary. It's definitely expands on where the short story was, because the short story is only like 6-8 pages, something like that.
Which book was that in? Do you remember?
I want to say it was in one of the earlier ones, so maybe Skeleton Key or Night Shift. There was another one in the same book called Popsy, where basically it's almost assumed that a dude tries to kidnap a little kid out of a van in the mall, and it turns out to be this vampire's grandson that he's kidnapping, who's also a vampire.
Oh, that sounds pretty fun. At some point I'm just going to go at least binge some of the Stephen King books that I've always wanted to binge. Maybe not every last one, but the ones I've always wanted to, at the very least. Anyway, she wrote, in regard to Dwight Renfield, "Completely shrouded in mystery and using an obvious assumed name, what makes Dwight Renfield so terrifying is that we get not only no human alter ego, but not even a backstory. He is simply a vicious, blood-hungry killer. All that is known about him is that he's a gruesome, violent murderer. He also shows himself to be a sadist. When during his brief encounter with reporter Richard Dees, he feeds Dees his blood only to drive him insane, allowing Dees to be framed for Renfield's killing spree. Notable is that in this film, drinking the blood of a vampire does not make you one of the undead. The brilliance of the character of Dwight Renfield lies in his lack of any human-like motivation. He just wants to kill, and he's flying, pun intended, solo. I am really bad at reading. So, those were her top five vampires and top five vampire films, pretty much. Joe offered his top five, and I feel like we've talked about them in some form or another anyway. Jerry Dandridge, Orlok from Salem's Lot, David from Lost Boys, Dracula, and Miriam Blaylock. You talked about her earlier, right?
Yeah, she was the main character in The Hunger.
Okay. Like, was she a good main character, would you say?
Yeah. I mean, again, she was sexy as hell. There's like a fucking softcore lesbian scene between her and Susan Sarandon that really made my childhood.
Susan Sarandon, it's so weird to look back, like, you know, on Rocky Horror, for instance, like, she was really attractive at one point in life. It's very weird to see her now, no doubt. I know you didn't officially have a top five vampire list per se, but is there any vampires that you wanted to give any special shout-outs or props to that we have not already discussed?
Let's see. The only ones I could really think of that I might add on would be... I'm looking through a couple of lists right now. Let's say, what the fuck was the dude's name in Blade 2?
Oh, gosh.
Nomek.
Okay, yeah.
He's a creepy-ass, freaking weird vampire, zombie vampire.
Yeah, gosh, it's been so many years since I've seen the Blade trilogy. It really has been a long time, and it's such a good fucking cast, by and large. I'm looking at it right now, and I'm like, Jesus. Part 2 has Wesley Snipes, Chris Christopherson, Ron Perlman, and Norman Reedus. Like, that's amazing cast for me. So,
and the only other one, I mean, I liked Eddie Murphy in Vampire in Brooklyn. Again, it was a different take, you know, a Caribbean vampire versus the traditionally European vampires. So there were a couple things that he was able to do differently. And then I guess the only other one I would add would be, I thought it was not necessarily a good movie, but an interesting take in making Judas the first vampire from Wes Craven's Dracula 2000 or Dracula 1999, depending upon what year you actually saw the movie in the theater.
I still haven't seen that movie. It's one of the few Wes Craven films I have not ever seen. Worthwhile or just an interesting idea?
It's not one of Wes's best, but no, I mean, it's the idea that Judas is cursed to become the first vampire for killing Christ, and that's who Dracula is. So, I mean, in it too, Christopher Plummer plays Van Helsing, and he's been Van Helsing for 200 some odd years because he's captured Dracula, and he just siphons a little bit of his blood out at a time to keep himself young.
I think I'd probably enjoy it. It's something I'll eventually get around to seeing.
I mean, there's so many fucking cliches in it. I mean, what's-her-face who played the sexy Borg chick in Star Trek is in it. She gets killed, you know, and, like, the dude's filming a news report of the plane that crashed with, you know, no security or anybody around it, and, you know, so you see her get lifted up to the side, and you realize that he's looking through the camera, so then all of a sudden they show it to you, and it's, you know, Dracula standing there. I like Gerard Butler, but again, it wasn't one of his best either, so.
It has a good cast. I mean, just name quality-wise, I mean, I see Omar Epps, Sean Patrick Thomas, Danny Masterson, Shane West, Nathan Fillion, and Vitamin C. I hate to admit this, but I remember going blindly to a Vitamin C concert with friends, and I hated my life. I just wanted to say that.
I bet you didn't. Anyways, it's about as cliche as like every vampire movie cliche you can throw in there, which is why it didn't make my top list. But I thought it was an interesting take on. I want to say too, like I think they had to, instead of killing him by any of the normal methods, they had to hang him from, you know, like Judas's noose or something like that. So,
huh, that is interesting. The only one I have to add to this is the Dracula in the Monster Squad film, which I know isn't meant to be a scary movie, or it's kind of maybe a gateway movie for kids, but I thought that Dracula was a badass. Like, he was cool, and he wanted to fuck shit up, and I don't know, I always really liked his performance. He was probably one of the better actors in that whole film, as far as I was concerned.
Were you the one who asked whether Monster Squad was better than the Goonies, or was that one of my other friends on Facebook?
That had to have been another friend of yours, but damn, that is a fine question.
We had an argument, and I had to go with Monster Squad. Most of them were Goonies. I'm like, fuck the Goonies. Monster Squad was fucking where it's at. Wolfman had NARS. Is she
the Stephen King shirt?
Is she a virgin? I mean, come on.
Yes. Yes. The montage song while they're making the bullets. There's so much great things in Monster Squad. Like, people who've never seen that, I'm just like, it's a horror version of the Goonies. Like, I think that's the most accurate way to describe it.
I never wanted to come out of the Goonies being one of the Goonies. I came out of the Monster Squad wanting to be Rudy when I was a kid, so.
Oh, yeah. Rudy, he was the badass, and he got the chick. Yeah. So much good stuff, and someday, maybe I will eventually get Ashley Banks on this podcast so we can talk to her.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So, with that being said, I think that wraps up our vampire stuff. Let's quickly go over to the collector. Actually, we're on a pretty good pace. We're actually on a really good pace right now. So, our friend Dom, he won the drawing this month, so he chose the collector for our horror movie of the month. I didn't expect Dom to choose the collector. I don't know. Did you see that one coming at all?
I haven't talked to Dom in a long, long time. I mean, other than just an occasional thing on Facebook. But, you know, I mean, I don't live up there anymore, so I don't see even as irregularly as you do. But, you know, no. I mean, again, we were friends, but never, like, to the point where I would have known, like, all of his movie expectations. But, no, I would not have picked The Collector as his first choice for horror movie to watch.
Yeah, I would have fully, in my mind, I was expecting either something that had a little bit of humor to it, or something like an 80s horror classic. That's what I was expecting when I saw that he won. And no, he chose The Collector. Really surprised me. We've talked about The Collector before on this podcast, I feel.
Yeah, we actually did just after the October one, because I wanted to discuss what you thought between the two of them after you finished watching both of them for your month. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we're not going to go over every question that's going to be in the blog. I did want to hit up a few of the questions. Actually, you asked a really good question. Why would the father send Arkin after the gun when there were no bullets with it? I read that and I was just like, God damn it. I've always thought about it, and then it escapes my mind by the end of the film.
See, the only other thing I could think of would be, like, did the collector get into the fucking thing and take the bullets from the gun? Because he's able to, like, superhumanly do fucking other physics-defying things, so.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, we've discussed is, I mean, how the hell could he have set up all of those traps in such a little amount of time? Even if you're fully prepared and have a full game plan and everything, I don't think it could be done. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, I just don't think it could be done.
I would agree. I mean, if the whole thing that kills the premise is the timeline, You know, the fact that it has to be done in one day because Arkin's wife needs the money within that short a period of time. If they had said, hey, the family's going on vacation, they're going to be gone for a month, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, Arkin's talking to his wife, and she's like, hey, they fucking... So this guy's had time to set it up in between then and... You know, I mean, in the morning, there were fucking, you know, people still working on the house, and all of a sudden, they didn't notice, you know, that there was, like, fucking amazing amounts of shit built into, like, every single wall in that fucking house.
But yeah, there was, like, no safe spots.
It's way more believable for the house than it is the rave that he didn't even know was going to be there in the Collector 2.
Or the Collection. The rave.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the rave was... God damn it, that was silly as hell. And you know, one of the questions was, you know, sequel or prequel. And the more I think about it, I would love to see a prequel. And, I mean, in my mind, I think it would tie in with the guy that we see in the box in The Collector, but it wouldn't necessarily have to. I don't know, I felt that was a starting point.
I kind of like my answer to your number 7. And I think that if they did a prequel with that, that would be fucking amazing. Like, if Macaulay Culkin was the fucking Collector. And you see him... You see him becoming one of John Kramer's disciples before he goes rogue.
See, people think I'm crazy because I always bring up Home Alone and Saw, but I still say, like, if some genius could get their hands on the rights to both and somehow collaborate it, I would just... I don't know. I would be in heaven. I truly would be.
Or even better, fuck that. Macaulay Culkin has gone on aimlessly through life since Home Alone 2, but when the Collector tries to break into his house, now it's war.
And Macaulay Culkin plays himself?
He plays, Kevin Bannister, or Kevin McAllister, but now Kevin McAllister is up against the Collector in a booby trap to the death.
God damn it. Only thing I would like to add is to get Heather Langenkamp in there for like 3 minutes. Just, she deserves an honorary role in the film. I mean, she did set up a little bit in Nightmare on Elm Street 1. So, yeah. I'd be all for that and having Tobin Bell make a quick appearance. God damn it. There'd be so many cool things to that.
Yeah, we can but wish. Home Alone meets the Saw Collector. I don't know.
Only in Fantasyland, but it's a good fantasy for me.
The nightmare the Saw Collector had when he was home alone.
Yeah, I mean, fuck it. Let's just have a 12-word fucking title for a movie, and people will... I mean, it can't be any worse than... What was it? Don't be a menace to society while drinking your juice in the hood.
That's true. No, I think a prequel would work. I don't think a sequel would, for like what I said in the blog. But I found some of the shit, like what he did with the people that he didn't chose to keep, but ended up being, you know, the way they turned into like creepy zombie people, you know, like that. He's an interesting character if you can ignore like the plot holes that accompany the movies.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see where, like, his origins were as far as, like, you know, how he learned to make the traps. Did he have a mentor? You know, what was the main premise? You know, with John Kramer, you know, as you watch the Saw franchise, you know, you get more and more in depth as to what made him fucking snap and whatnot. I would love to actually know more about the Collector, plus... I would just like to see him actually set up a house full of traps. I would be fine with watching a movie of him setting up the traps and then just watching the traps unfold. I'd be okay with that.
I mean, like the one thing, you nobody's heard of him in the first one, but, I mean, you know because of the way the movie starts and then the fact that What's-His-Face crawls out of the box, that he's been doing it for a while. Well, then the second one starts, and it seems like this guy would be the FBI's number one most fucking wanted dude from the amount of, like, houses and sprees it's talking about in like the newspaper clippings and the news articles at the beginning, you know, when Arkin's going to the hospital. So I'm like, either there was a disconnect in, you know, in what he knew about the world around him, or there's a disconnect between what the intention was between movie one and movie two.
Yeah, fair enough. I asked the question about what trap was the favorite, and then I was like, there are so many to choose from. And then I saw that you had the whole acid thing, and I was like, that really was going to be my answer. And that was going to change. I'm like, no, the acid floor really was brilliant in its own way. I mean,
the acid floor and then the window with the blades.
Yeah. I don't know. There was so much to like about it.
I mean, the fishhooks one was probably one of the most effective, but...
Oh, you know, yeah. Jesus. They really put a lot of thought into, like, all the various things, and they're like, all these ideas are too good, we're just going to fit them all in the film. Like, I feel that's how it got written. They were just like, I don't want to get rid of this one, it's too good. So they didn't.
And for the number of traps that they had in it, I think it had a relatively low body count.
Yeah, it was just the mom, the dad, Jill, the boyfriend.
And the one or two cops.
Oh, yeah, the cops. Yeah. Yeah, it was a relatively low body count. I mean, Jesus, he probably had... I don't know. I would say it's got to be in the teens for traps, at least.
I would say he probably could have taken out, like, a good 50 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really would like to see Josh Stewart in more stuff. I really like him as an actor, and I feel that if he was in any other genre other than horror, I think he'd be a more well-known name.
I've seen him, and he's done a couple bit part. Like, I think he was in either The Dark Knight Returns or The Dark Knight Rises. But, again, he's been just a bit part. Yeah, he's been doing a lot of directing and acting in the movies that he's directed lately, if his IMDb thing is accurate.
Yeah. And like I said, I liked him in that one movie that I saw during October called The Neighbor. I thought that was pretty damn good. So I hope to see more of him. Definitely would like to see more of him. So with all of that being said, one thing I didn't do is I did not come into this podcast with a definitive idea of what our top five would be for December. So I will ask you, do you have anything in mind that, like, you've been kind of like hoping that we'd get to that we just haven't gotten to?
Well, since it is basically just been me and you for the most of it, I was almost thinking two top fives, because they go pretty quickly when it's just us and maybe one or two people. But I started thinking, I mean, like, what between December and, like, January, you know, we usually do them at the end of the month, what's coming up. I was like, oh, New Year's, I was like, there's a lot of Christmas horrors, but so much New Year's. I'm like, oh, I started thinking Y2K. So I was like, what about top five apocalypse movies and then top five post-apocalypse?
Okay. I am good with that. I'm good with that. And so that's what we're going to go for. I'm kind of holding out. There's one thing in particular I'm waiting to do, but it's one of those things where I don't want to do, like, every obvious idea initially. Like, I wanted to have some creative ideas in between some of the heavy hitters. So, this is great for us. I think it'll be interesting. And then we'll do the drawing for December. And hopefully we'll get a decent movie for December. I don't know. So far it's been like this weird... Let's see, we've had Hereditary, The Ritual, and The Collector. So there's really no overarching theme. We've just had... They've all been recent movies. That's probably about the closest thing we... Or, well, The Collector is the oldest, which isn't terribly old. Not even 10 years? No.
Yeah, maybe 10. Maybe lower, somewhere in there. 2009, 2007, something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I think that's it.
I wanted to make a suggestion. I mean, I don't want to throw too much out there, but I I really feel I like the do not or are you entertained? But I was thinking maybe to differentiate the horror podcast from your wrestling and your other podcasts. I was thinking maybe Kenter at your own risk.
Ooh, that gave me a little mahogany,
a little teak.
Yeah, that should be doable. I'm actually thinking of a couple of logos. Yeah, we could absolutely do that because it really is tough when, you know, 90% of the podcast are wrestling so far, and now it's not as big of a percentage. You know, moving forward, say for podcast of wrestling, then our horror podcast, and I'd like to do even another one throughout. You know, it's tough to find somebody that can even make a month to month commitment, but I like doing podcasts. I find, I don't know, it's just fun to talk about something that, you know, you and another person are passionate about, I guess.
Exactly.
But the thing is, you know, aside from wrestling and horror, my passions probably consist of basketball and video games. I would like a video game podcast, but the problem with that is that I don't know how I would do something like that. It would almost be like you'd have to have a video game of the month or some. I don't know how that would work conceptually.
I think it could work in a top 5 or 10 format, but it would have to be very, you know, I wouldn't have to say strict, but it'd be real easy to talk for fucking hours and hours and hours, I think, about video games. You know, whereas for like a horror movie or even a wrestling match, you only have a couple hours of content per each one. You know, what you talk about like open world video games, you could have 200 hours of Skyrim, 200 hours of The Witcher, you know, 100 hours of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, mate. It's something to possibly consider for next year. Maybe, I don't know. It's something to think about, because, I mean, we know gamers. I mean, gaming shit's really popular on YouTube and Twitch, and I don't know. Maybe those are the two big things, but
maybe, I mean, still, maybe that one could be like Kenter the Dragon.
Show enough. Yeah, I don't know. It's something to think about. It's something we'll figure out. But yeah, what was it? Kenter at your own risk?
Yep.
I like that. And one thing though, you know, now, I mean, what is this? This is only our third podcast, but because we've talked about films in depth the first two times, each podcast is going to get a little bit more easily maintained because it's going to be stuff we've already talked about. You know, the same films are going to keep popping up time and time again in some way. So these podcasts will probably at some point get closer to an hour. I mean, we're about 90 minutes right now, a little under 90 minutes. So this is a lot better than our 3 to 4 hour podcast of the past. So I like it. Do you have any other parting thoughts before we get out of this?
No, I mean, I like the fact that vampires have been able to adapt and evolve over the years. I mean, I don't necessarily think that Twilight was great, but the fact that you have something that's able to be bestial, sexy, an animal, I mean, vampires exist throughout almost every civilization's legends and history, you know, some kind of similar monster, whether, you know, there's the hopping ones from China or, you know, the Vrykolakos from Greece, or, you know, the fucking flying head thing from some Middle Eastern things. I just appreciate vampire literature and movies.
And really, there's even, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's like a good chunk of vampire TV out there at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, shit. Like, there have been fucking things, as, you know, serious ones, non-serious ones. I liked Being Human. There's Forever Night. Kindred, The Embraced, probably would have been a great show if the main dude hadn't fucking died in a motorcycle accident 13 episodes in. You know, as much flack as I might have seemed to give it, fucking Buffy the Vampire Slayer was groundbreaking for TV when it came out. Yeah, so.
Yeah, Buffy was huge. What was it? True Blood was a big thing,
yeah.
I guess.
True Blood, yeah. That was another case where they fucking jumped the shark, but yeah, it was another good show.
Yeah, so, when I was preparing for this, I was like, are we ever going to be able to do a werewolf-themed one? Like, off top of your head, is there enough werewolf stuff out there to actually do a top five? Like, that will be different enough, or...
Yeah, oh yeah.
You think so?
I would say if we were trying to do top tens, that would be different, then yes. But top five, yeah. I mean, especially with the number of people who share in, we're only really looking at, what, maybe 20, 25 movies total?
True. I mean, everybody's going to have American Werewolf in London. I feel that's going to be the number one given on everybody's list. Aside from that, I don't know, just off the top of my head, I know Howling, I know...
if we ever do this, let's not give everybody away the ideas.
Well, I'm trying to think, though, like, I'm running out of ideas. Like, I have a few more, I guess. I will say, there was a movie in, I don't know, a few years ago called Howl. And anybody that hasn't seen it, try to find it. It was on Netflix at one point.
Dark Soldiers?
I see, I've never seen that. So, yeah, I know. If you could hit me right now, you probably would. And
I'd be okay with it. Not that. Violent, but, I mean, it explains where super glue comes from.
No shit. I did not know that.
Huh. It was actually developed in World War II as a medical suture thing, and then people found that it caused shit to stick together so well, they turned it into civilian facet.
Huh. Well,
that could be wrong, but I learned that from Dog Soldiers, so. Must be true.
Yeah. Well... With the Abbott and Costello movie, was that them with the mummy or the werewolf? I can't remember anymore.
I want to say I think they did one where they meet the mummy, where they meet Frankenstein, where they meet the werewolf, and possibly one where they met Dracula.
Okay, so they just did the whole Universal thing. Okay, that's cool. Makes sense. Yeah. All right. At this point, it's a good time to close this out. We'll be back. I don't know. It depends, because, you know, it's Christmas and you got New Year's. I don't know. We're going to be back either late December, early January. I don't fully know. We're going to iron that out, but we will be back in approximately a month. So, any final thoughts?
No, I had fun with this one, even though a lot of it was relatively off the top of my head. I didn't have to do as much, you know, deep dive research to try to figure out what my top fives were.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and this is actually a perfect topic, because I always need to... November's my come-down month. Like, I don't watch movies, I don't do jack shit, I just play video games almost all month in November. I sleep and play video games, and occasionally watch a TV show. Like, that's it. Like, so this was a really good topic for November, so... With that being said, anybody who's listening on iTunes, if you want, subscribe. If you like this, leave us a comment. Check out 9deuce.com. That's where all of this stuff really starts with. You know, we got the blogs and we got the podcast. There is going to be a blog format of both the vampire stuff and the collector. Hopefully 2019 we're going to have more stuff, but right now we still have like TV show stuff and we have, wrestling. So... Hopefully 2019 we'll have more stuff. So that's what we have. And in case we don't do a podcast between now and then, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you. So
enjoy your Festivus.
For the rest of us. And end.